to me, my X-Men.
Welcome, everybody, to Back in My Day. My name is David Petrangelo, and this week, the not-so-stereotypical millennials will be getting together to talk about a Comic-Con experience here in Toronto, where we're based, and we'll be talking about the first two episodes of the highly anticipated X-Men 97. This week, I'm lucky enough to be joined by
Michael R. Power
and Ian Walter.
Gentlemen, I am very excited to talk to you guys this evening because not only do we have a couple of adult beverages in our hands at the moment, and it is late, we are very tired, but some of that might sort of lean into our ramblings as we go through this episode, but I was not able to join you guys for Toronto Comic Con 2024 this year. You guys went and had a ball of a time, and then we also have the first two premiere episodes of X-Men 97, something we've been talking about, thinking about for the past, I want to say it's like 2 years, 3 years maybe since they announced it. So we'll get to X-Men in a few moments. We'll have some overall thoughts on that and then break down sort of some spoilers and all that as we talk about it. But we'll give you a heads up on that. But first, let's talk a little bit about a Comic-Con experience. I'm kind of going to throw it to you guys because you guys sent pictures. You guys were putting out some social media posts about you guys going. You went to panels. You guys got awesome comics, met people. Whoever wants to start, you guys kind of go for it and take the reins on this.
No, it's very fitting to do this during our X-Men 97 episode because the Comic-Con was very X-Men the Animated Series heavy and very X-Men Animated Series focused. It was a big focus of the Comic-Con, and they even debuted, we didn't get to go on the Saturday and Sunday, but they even debuted the episodes early for people that were at the Comic-Con waited in line at the Xavier's Lounge. You actually got to see the episodes before anyone else at Comic-Con. So
like a solid like 4 or 5 days before it would actually aired on Disney.
So we didn't get to do that, but we did get to meet some of the cast and the people behind the show, and we did get to go to a panel of all the voice actors. Me and Ian had a blast. We are big comic book fans, comic book collectors. We were there for the comics and for the X-Men 97 mostly. So not only did we get to go to, we'll talk about the panel and meeting people on X-Men 97, but the other highlights that we kind of did was we got to meet Cody Ziegler, the writer of Miles Morales and some Spider-Punk comics, and we got him to sign some books. He was a really, really nice guy. We get to chat with him. He didn't have a lineup the time we went, and we caught the end of his panel too. So I know that was a highlight for you too, Ian. You got a bunch of signatures on your Miles Morales number one. So what did you think of meeting Cody there at Comic-Con?
Oh, it was a great experience. I like, you know, the whole Toronto Metro Convention Center. Funny enough, being a co-host of Back in My Day, you would think that like cons would be a regular thing for me, but Fan Expo was my first 2 years ago. I've been twice now, probably go again upcoming August, and that's same location, same vibe, but takes full advantage of the Metro Convention Center.
Whereas it's the bigger one,
Toronto Comic Con is a little smaller. It only uses like that first big area and then some of the auditoriums. But that being said, like you said, Power, it's more comic focused. It's like, you know, not everything under the sun. It's more tailored towards the comic book fans, which I kind of liked. Of course, there's a lot of great cosplay, and we got to meet up with some of the great Star Wars cosplayers and take some pictures. And meeting Cody Ziegler was great. In addition to the X-Men Animated Series panel, we had a panel with Cody where he was talking about his time writing for Spider-Punk and Miles Morales. And to hear that he's going to be on doing Miles Morales issues for at least another 36 issues, it's quite an incredible.
He kind of announced it there. The host kind of seemed rocked. Like, oh, wait, that hasn't been announced anywhere. He's like, yeah, I guess I'll say here, I'm doing 36 more issues.
That's a lot of issues.
It's already, and it's like a monthly, right? So that's like a 2 year solid gig for him.
Nice. Plus.
Which is quite wild. So, you know, we got our Miles Morales comic signed. I got one signed from my nephew Jordan. Shout out Jordan. But also the Carnage Reigns. storyline. So, you know, with Carnage and Miles on the cover, I thought that was pretty cool. And Spider-Punk number one signed. So some great signatures there. And then, of course, the the highlight, I would be surprised if it wasn't yours as well, Power, is the meeting Larry Houston, meeting the director of X-Men the Animated Series. Massive cartoon from our childhood is literally what we're here to talk about for this episode. And you know, it's X-Men, it's the animated style that Larry Houston brought to that show is essentially how we viewed the X-Men growing up, and how we kind of like idolized them in the in their kind of aesthetic with the, you know, the bright colors, and Wolverine had the yellow and blue aesthetic,
and that's the animation is the reason why when the X-Men movies came out, people were disappointed that that wasn't the outfit that they were wearing. It's because of that, because those movies, and especially the first one, like, it's coming out for people like us, or at least around our generation and our age and everything. And the fact that that's not what they went for disappointed some people. It doesn't matter what the movie was, like, that aesthetic wasn't there. And now the fact that Hugh Jackman's going to show up with that suit in the Deadpool movie makes people extra excited.
Coming full circle.
Exactly. It all comes back to exactly what you're talking about with that style and everything. I think that is 100% true.
And the style, that style, we have Larry Houston to thank. So
exactly.
Yeah. So let's get in.
I was just going to say, I got this nice Wolverine print signed by
Larry. Yeah.
It is cool. So it's very cool. Check out social media. We have it at Day Back In. If you're listening, check it. We have pictures up there and stuff as well that you guys put up, and
all our pickups. They're great. Sent out all our pickups, everything we bought. So the panel though was all the classic voice actors, basically like Wolverine and you know, a lot of Rogue. Them like Rogue Jubilee and a lot of them stuff, it's just their normal Jubilee. Voice. So when they're talking, it's like, oh, that's Rogue.
Oh, really? Okay.
But really, cool. The highlight of the panel was Larry Houston. He's really the man responsible for the show and what it became. And he was the director and producer of the series, but he was like everyone else that's a producer or whatever of the series is kind of like a studio suit or executive, and he was like the comic book fan, like guy
picking those great
story he was bringing arcs. He said it was before, in his stories were the best ones, like they were just telling kind of funny stories, they weren't breaking any news or anything, but all his stories resonated the most, and just so how much responsible he is for the joy that this show brought us is attributed a lot of that we contribute to him, because he was bringing his comic books in and Xeroxing them, he mentioned, and sending them to the storyboard artists and everything, try to get as accurate as possible. He was a fan of the comics first, and he thought it was his responsibility to sort of make the show as accurate to the comics and everything like that. And it was just awesome to hear his stories, hear him talk about the love behind the show, and just like the other stories, like I can't get into all of them, but then after that, we were like, okay, we have to go meet him, because there was in a panel, there weren't a lot of questions. Like, we have to go meet him. We have to buy some art and get to talk to him.
And like let him know how influential this show is.
Yeah, so then we lined up in his booth at his booth, and we bought some art from him. We thanked him for you know, just bringing us the joy. And like I mentioned that I love him, a huge comic book fan, and my introduction to X-Men and all the great storylines was from the show. And I got to ask him one question, which was, you know, it's like all the famous storylines that they did in the show are based on comics. Dark Phoenix, Saga, a Future Past, and I sort of mentioned, are they going to be still adapting comic book runs in the new 97 series, which he's not really that involved in, right, the original series, but he said, I was so happy when he was like, yes, they are actually, they're doing the stories I left them. I took all the best ones, but the ones that
what's
that
left over after, yeah,
because you know, he did the Dark Phoenix saga, Days of Future Past, he did all the ones, but they are still, it was great to hear that they are still going to be mining the comic book material in the X-Men 97 show. So that was really, really great to hear.
Okay.
And I'm glad you mentioned that, because I'll tease ahead, because when we get to some speculation, maybe towards the end, I think like they are going to be adapting some of the
comic, yeah, when
or
me
at least they may be hinting that.
We broke down the trailer when it dropped, and we got into the fact that, you know, these are the storylines we'd love to see. So now it's going to be great. Like, and you watch the episodes and sort of, you know, tying them back to the comics and which arcs they're doing and this and that. I haven't read every X-Men comic out there, but I'm very familiar with a lot of the big storylines, so I should be able to recognize them when I see them. And this could just be another introduction to X-Men comic books for us, and maybe make us go back and read the storylines like the original show did for me. Like
Dark Phoenix, I mean, Saga, I will say for me that the comic storylines, I don't know them. I don't, because I didn't, like I've said,
know them through the show, right? That's my.
I know the show, and even honestly, I don't even know the last time I watched the show. Definitely not to completion. And do I remember all the storylines when I watched them in whatever 95 or no? Definitely not. I was a kid, you know. So for me, even if I went back and rewatched the entire series, which I know you've done within the last couple of years, Mike, I think I would be like seeing things that I don't even recognize or don't even remember, and it would be fun because it would feel new to me. So if they're adapting those things, watch. Great.
This show, so we'll pivot into talking about the animated series. So the animated series, right. My very first episode back in my day, we talked about everyone we kind of have on the show does this, defining shows and movies of your childhood. I picked X-Men the Animated Series.
Right.
I think to me, it's the series I have rewatched and seen the most. Because I watched it every Saturday morning, and then sometime around high school, almost going to high school, my neighbor had them all like illegally on DVDs and burnt me a copy.
Nice.
And it was like,
was also gifted DVDs. Those as well and loved it.
Yeah, and I used to watch it nonstop. And then when I got Disney Plus, I was watching through all the cartoons. And last year, in preparation for 97, I watched through the whole series again. So I've probably seen the whole series like 10 times.
Jeez.
And it's quite long. It's six seasons. I've seen it a lot.
Six seasons of probably like, you know, the 20 episodes or whatever they used to do.
It gets shorter, right? As it goes on. But okay. Yeah, it's, I forget, probably 100 or 20, 120 or so episodes.
Yeah, it's got to be something like that, right? Yeah.
But I will say about my X-Men 97, it stems back to that panel. When we're sitting there, we knew, you know, we're excited, you know, not so stereotypical millennials, we're going to be excited X-Men, the animated series is coming back. But when they announced the voice actors come back, cool. But when you're sitting there in the theater and they're all there and they sound like the characters, you're like, wow. And then you think back, like, yes, this was in the 90s. These guys are, you know, still around and still crushing it at these voices. It's quite impressive.
It's 30 years since they've done it, right? Or almost 30 years since the show ended.
The guy that did Cyclops.
Yeah, the voice of Cyclops.
And they attributed him there and mentioned him a lot. He was a big part of the cast. So, but everyone that's around... pretty much came back for the 97 show, which is awesome.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so the voice of Cyclops was Norm Spencer. Okay. So rest in peace, Norm. But I think they got Ray Chase coming in X-Men 97. But let's get into it, Dave. X-Men 97. You watch it?
I did watch it. I was lucky enough that I sat down and I watched both episodes back to back. I just hit next on the episode And I think you put out a post earlier, as of today, which was the day we were recording, mere hours after these episodes debuted. But Ian, I think you put a post out saying, like, if you skip the intro,
you're dead to me.
I'm paraphrasing, but if you skip the intro, you're a piece of trash, essentially. So I skipped to the next episode, and I definitely watched the entire intro. It's so good, man. It's not
good
exactly
you watched the second episode intro, because there's actually a change in it.
Yeah, they tweak it, which was pretty cool too.
Oh my god, I think I missed that. Okay, we'll get to that in a second. Anyways, the point is, it's still very good. It's not exactly the same, the music, but it's very, very similar. The intro isn't exactly the same, but it's very, very. It's just excellent. So like the second.
Oh, I have
that
something
starts,
to mention about that.
Go for it.
About exactly what you said. So
yeah.
So Larry Houston, as we mentioned, is the creative visionary behind the show.
Mm-hmm.
He like storyboarded the original show, and he storyboarded that intro. So he doesn't have a producer or director credits on the 97 show, but I was listening to an interview with the director, and they mentioned that when they wanted to do the credits, that they brought Larry Houston in.
Oh, that's amazing.
To storyboard the new intro so that it was as close as possible to the old intro.
Nice.
And it is basically exactly possible, but they exactly the same. Even like the songs hit at the same time, but then they squeeze in the new characters. They squeeze in Bishop and Morph.
They
still hit the big parts of when the song hits in the old intro. Like it's still like is the same. So yeah. So shout out to Larry Houston. I'm so glad that they brought him back to do the intro, because it looks amazing. It looks like an updated version. It looks like what the original intro looks like in your mind. When you go back and rewatch the show now, it does not look as good as it does in your mind. But when you watch an intro from 97, you're like, this is exactly like the old one. But if you were to go back and watch the old one, you would notice
everything's not quite smoother. Everything just like moves smoother. Yeah. That's what it is.
Like I've mentioned exactly before about how Super Mario 64 looks in my mind versus what it actually looks like when you play it.
It's the same phenomenon.
Every 64 game, every PlayStation 1 game is that. Yeah. So what was the difference between 1 and 2? Because the first thing I noticed was the fact that Bishop and Morph are in it. I hadn't watched the intro.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, Power, but the first one seemed to mimic the original, like the OG one, like pretty spot on, right?
I think they both
Morph and Bishop got Morph and Bishop got
added. Yeah.
In the first one? In the first
episode? Yeah, they're in the first episode too. Yeah.
So was it just Magneto that got added now?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Maybe I just wasn't paying enough attention to it. Or
super quick because it still fits and hits all the.
They have to
arc, so they squeeze them in. They drop frames and then I don't know. They squeeze them.
They might because it has to meet. It's probably the same length, right? They probably just
yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's the same length. Yeah, because the music has to match up and everything. Yeah. Overall, I thought this was great. I honestly thought it was gonna be just. I almost sort of expected within even as I was watching the first like 10 minutes or something. That this is just going to be a lot of, at least for the first episode, be just like a nostalgia pull, and that's what they're going to mine essentially is just that. And I do think that is there. I think that's present in both of these episodes, but that's not the focus. They are focused on telling an actual story that we haven't seen in this series before. I think it is layered, or they are placing, you know, points to make this more layered. You know, the Rogue situation I think is prime example of that, which we'll get into. And I think that you know, the action scenes in it, especially the first episode, I thought were great. And I think a lot of that is attributed to the fact that it's still like you guys were talking about with the intro, Mike, like you just mentioned, this is what you think the 94 season or whatever looked like.
92, but, it started.
92. Yeah, whatever it is, right? Like, pick a season, any of them. Pick the 95 season. It doesn't matter.
Well,
right?
The last season is the last season has the worst animation.
The first one stands out in my mind almost crystal clear. Like, I just rewatched it recently, and like, I remembered every episode.
Right, but the animation itself, like literally just the animation.
Yes. Yeah.
I think
it's how it looks in your mind.
Yeah, and I think that's a great thing to for them to have done, because the way that they did it is because it still looks, I mean, it's not hand-drawn because that's just not how they do it anymore. They still kept that style, but everything
Jim
just
Lee style.
Yeah. The Jim Lee style and everything. And just like the way that everyone moves is just smoother.
When they're dancing. It's kind of funny.
The dancing is yeah. But just the actions, everything is just smooth. And that is the touch-ups of, you know, the advancements in animation and everything, but it never feels like you're watching Shrek, for example. You know what I mean? Like,
or
something
old
like
90s
that.
Cartoon. Yeah.
Yeah. You don't feel like you're watching a show. You don't feel like you're watching a Pixar animated movie or anything like that. Like, there's hints of CG, and I think you can sort of see it a little bit more in some of the scenes and some of the shots, but it's not overtaking what the feel, look, and just overall art style is of these characters.
So right.
Yeah.
So,
that balance is there. Like, at times, like, I think when they're dancing, you know, you kind of see like Jubilee's like jacket kind of moving in a different way, which you wouldn't be able to do, you know, 30 years ago, but now you can. But it doesn't pull you out of it and think, oh, this doesn't belong in 1997, for example. So I think that is a huge plus for the show, for sure. And
by the way, the animation was done by Studio Mir, which was like, it's a pretty good studio. It does like Legends of Korra and like,
which
some
is
big,
which are great, looking, North American great looking animation. Shows. Yeah. So it's
Avatar, Legend of Korra. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that those, that goes a really long way for me enjoying it. And we'll get into sort of some like more specific points, but I thought it was really great. I think it's good. I think it's something to pay attention to. I think it's something to watch. And, I'm happy that we're going to be going through some of these episodes because they've done a really good job. Mike, go for it. Yep. What do you think?
Okay. My favorite part about it is that it's a direct continuation and sequel. It's not a reboot. It's not a Lego sequel. If you've seen the original five seasons, it picks up like whatever, 6 months, maybe a year.
I think it's roughly like they show events. They show something.
But Xavier, let's just spoiler alert.
Okay,
like,
spoiler
Xavier
alert.
Dies in the original series. Spoiler for a 20 or 5 year old show. Xavier dies in the original series, and that just picks up that
similar thread. To what happens in The Last Stand if you're watching the movies.
That's yes, true. That's
similar.
Yeah.
And it still has the sort of Friends of Humanity, and so it. If you watch the original series, if you're familiar with it, it just feels like you're watching the next season. It feels like you're watching season 6.
Yes. Well, they show the professor's death certificate, I think, in the second episode, and it's November 11th of 1996, I believe. And this show is supposed to take place in 97. Maybe it's
a year has gone by.
Yeah, maybe it's like 6 months later.
It feels like the next season, right? Absolutely. But then at the same time, if you're a new person jumping in, if you're a kid now, it does a good job of introducing you to everyone and setting the stage. And if you're, it actually is very similar to the pilot episode of X-Men, the original series, Night of the Sentinels. Instead of Jubilee, it's Sunspot, right? It's a teenage hero who gets captured and then they have to fight the Sentinels. It's very similar, and it's a two-part episode. So it's almost like two-part episode. It's not really two-part episode, but it's very similar to that pilot of X-Men, the animated series. So I love they did that. So it's like, it's just like, when I watched it, I honestly had goosebumps when the theme song came on. I felt like I was a kid again on Saturday morning. It gave me all the feels. It was exactly everything I wanted.
You know what you have to do, Mike, is you have to sit literally on the floor with a bowl of cereal on Saturday. On a Saturday.
Oh, on Saturday.
And watch the first, just the intro. Just watch the intro and see how big those goosebumps are. That's what you have to do. You have to measure them.
Were just a little bit older, I would love to share this experience with them. But like, my daughter was, my kids are too young. Like, my daughter was, when I was watching it last year, she was 3. And a lot of times I'd watch her, she was napping. So she'd go up for a nap and she'd want to watch it with me. I'm like, it's a little too. She was just so
it's pretty mature content and concepts for a cartoon.
Yes. So I will.
Oh, this one
I
especially.
Show it to her and I'll rewatch it again when she's ready and maybe when she's 7.
Right.
But the other thing I love about the show is that it continues the spirit of the first show and the comics, where although it's a kid's show, it does not talk down to you, to kids at all. It's not dumbed down at all. It's these heavy themes. Not heavy themes, but these themes that are present and what make the X-Men so good, the dynamics of, you know, them being ostracized and marginalized, and, you know, those are all just front and center themes in this kids show, and it doesn't shy away from them at all. And it's
they
such a good
explicitly say it in these episodes.
Yeah.
Explicitly.
It's such a cool thing to be in a kids show. The show is for kids, but it has these themes in it that are straight from the comics that the X-Men has always been about. And it doesn't shy away from those themes. So I love that about the show too. And I love that about the original show. But then it still gives you the comic book, you know, the over the top soap opera-iness of it and the comic book action and everything. So it just, they, in my mind, completely nailed it. And so, like, a lot of credit goes out to the whole creative team. Bo DeMeo, who was the creator, and I know he has left the show under suspicious circumstances. No one knows why, but, like, the week before it dropped, he either quit or got fired or something.
Yeah, he was, like, just not a part of it anymore. So, yeah.
All signs point to he was let go, but...
but there's...
Don't have all the facts.
You don't know why, right? It could be a legitimate reason, so... You can't speculate, but I just want to say, like, I even though whatever reason he left, he can tell he had love for the original series, the way these episodes turned out. Yeah. So,
Especially if they took the time to reach out to Larry Houston, if he's not even involved, to get him on board for the intro.
All right. So, what did you think, Ian, of the first episode?
It sucked.
Well, exactly. I agree with you.
The worst thing I've ever seen in my it's worse than Spawn.
I know you said, like, it's just a continuation season 6 rather than like a sequel, but it also accomplished, like, having been, you know, kind of rebooted for a new generation, it did accomplish what a good Lego sequel does. Is basically, like, you know, like you said, they bring back the familiar themes of that first episode of the animated series, but they kind of update it and bring in new characters and try and breathe new life into it. And I think that's exactly what they did. They kind of repeated the beats of that pilot and still kind of progress the story forward beyond losing Professor X. Now we've got Magneto stepping in at the end of that first episode, and he's going to be the leader because Cyclops and Jean Grey got their own mess going on the side. So there's a lot going on. I think our featured favorite characters from the title card Like they all kind of get moments to shine, and there's some other characters peppered in here and there, which are great. Love to see all the cameos and whatnot. I do think it's kind of interesting that like it's just established that this is like a season six. There's the X-Men. There's going to be random X-Men popping in and out without any explanation. They're just kind of, you know, Angel at one point shows up, and you're just like, all right, cool.
That's because Morph, right? That was Morph.
Oh, was that Morph? Okay, yeah, so I missed that detail. Yeah. So there you go. So he morphs into X-Men Psylocke that are not too, like featured. Yeah. That's a good way, actually, to feature some of the characters that are not yet introduced in the show.
He's becoming my favorite character, and I always loved him in the original, but he is overpowered in this new episode because he morphs into people, and he takes their powers. So he can have the powers of Blob, Psylocke, Archangel. It's like, what? He's the most powerful mutant then.
And I think I noticed a detail where, you remember they called back to the credits, so when an episode ends, they had that like digital,
like
a Mortal Kombat selection screen.
I love it.
Choose a character, see their abilities. So I read on Morphs that he takes on their physical attributes, so he wouldn't be able to get like Jean Grey's telekinesis or anything like that. It would just be like, you know, if he's the Blob, then he's bigger and therefore a little bit more powerful. Like he does take on those characteristics, like Colossus we saw
Colossus
in episode two. So he gets the physical side, but I don't think he actually gains like their like mental.
Not like
powers. That makes sense.
Not it's like a good Jubilee way to not apparently have that can take people's doctorate from them. I didn't realize that was
Rogue.
Rogue.
That was a little bit of license there too, right? Because that would have put him in an indefinite coma, like, you know what I mean, like, as from what we know from Rogue's
but I didn't realize like she could take, maybe this is me,
she
just
can
not...
take people's if she touches a mutant, she takes their powers. If she touches a human, she takes their like memories and stuff.
Okay. Yeah, and I guess you could justify it that like for a short period of time she would have like prominent like sort of brain power to know what
it's
was
totally
going
fine
on.
It didn't throw me out of it or whatever. Time, I just didn't quite remember that like specific detail of someone who wasn't a mutant.
Yeah, we usually associate it with her taking the superpowers.
I think like maybe that's mutants, probably right? Why like, is this? I didn't quite make the connection.
Is known for in the animated series, of course, to be she took Ms. Marvel's, who we now know as Captain Marvel's powers. So she was lying there in a coma while she could fly around and use her abilities indefinitely.
Right.
Think. So yeah. So I just thought it was a great return to the show, and I just like you, Power. I got those goosebumps, you know, hearing that intro song.
The first episode is very much Night of the Sentinels. I don't think it's really based too much on any comic book. I think it's more of a rehash of the pilot. So
in kind of circling back to that storyline that they kind of left in season one, which was like the whole Trask and the Sentinels kind of stuff. That's
Master Mold appears, I think, three times. They just beat him in the original series.
He keeps coming back.
Master Mold's always coming back.
When we get that tease of like Jean Grey having the vision of like Super Master Mold or whatever it is, I think this is their idea of like planting that seed for whatever happens
never
next.
The one thing I want to say about the first episode is, I think it's easy because everybody's like, yeah, Wolverine's so cool or whatever. He's such a badass. He just doesn't give a shit or whatever. He's always talking down to and is always butting heads with Cyclops, right? That's part of his character. It's part of his personality. Has been for like, you know, 40 years or whatever it's been, right? Yeah. The action scene in this with Cyclops is great.
Oh, it's so good.
He does crazy cool shit in this, and I just think it looks cool. It's badass. I think it just, the fact that he's pushing him. Yeah, he really like shows it. Like they really make you feel like, yeah, this, maybe this is in the animated series, and because I haven't seen it in 20 years, maybe things like this do show up. But he's like, you know, he's grabbing the, I guess, hostage at that time. He's grabbing Sunspot and he's pushing them back and he's pushing himself back and he's diving down from the plane that gets blown up in the second episode.
Okay, that falling sequence was epic.
It's great, but so cool. Cyclops in those particular scenes feels awesome. And I think that's really cool because he's going to be presumably a very big focus in this for a lot of obvious reasons. And I think they did a good job of making him feel kind of badass. Cause like, oh, he's just a guy that like shoots beams. He wears glasses. Like he's not cool. He's lame because he's super boring, which they also
Boy Scout. Yeah.
He's a Boy Scout, which they also comment on in the second episode, but like all that stuff is there, but I think they did a good job of making him seem pretty cool with what he could do with his abilities.
The classic tropes, you know, the banter, like you said, between him and Wolverine, and then, you know, that love triangle where Wolverine's always in love with Jean Grey, but she's always going to go for, you know, Psych. That all gets revisited, and I can't even remember if this is the original animated series or X-Men 97, but at one point, Cyclops goes, Wolverine, are you coming, or is it your day off? And I was just like, it's all starting to blend together already, which is great. I think that was actually from the original series.
That's a testament to it.
Those are the kind of lines you get between them, right?
Yeah.
And and then, like you said, Cyclops landing, like that superhero landing, that's like, how many times have we seen superhero landings and like whatever, but like that was, if you're going to do it, that was a cool effing way to do it. And
100%.
And 100%. I just thought when he was falling though, and he was like, he was kind of spinning his beams and cutting through the Sentinels. I couldn't help but think of Wolverine Origins, X-Men Origins Wolverine with Deadpool doing the same thing. His head was like spinning on the way down and like cutting circles through the silo.
Or the reactor.
Yeah.
That episode, so yeah, that episode, but the ending of the episode, I think, is the big, it was given away in the trailer, but Magneto shows up and he takes over the school, and that's from the comics. Like, Magneto is like, turns into a true
starts as
a villain and turns into a true anti-hero and joins the X-Men at multiple times. But I think that with that costume, that purple costume, as far as I know, that's like the first time he joins the X-Men, and
his long luscious hair.
You know. I like what they did with they made him the grand zaddy. They made him a lot more sex appeal with this Magneto, the redesign costume and everything. He's not that sexy in the original series, but it fits. And they play with it.
They play with it a little. Yeah. Like, they use the fact that you know he's a supervillain to kind of throw you off at times, right? Like,
and then that's the first episode, right? He takes over and grand zaddy. Yeah. So then the second episode is where I really enjoyed the second episode, and I noticed a lot of comic book storylines that they mined.
Okay.
In the second, it's not. A direct...
I noticed something else, but not comic book related.
Yeah, it's
so
not a direct one to one, but there is a famous trial of Magneto comic book where like he gets put on trial by the UN for his crimes and everything. So that's probably the biggest one. That's what happens in the episode. That's like the biggest inspiration, I think, for the episode. So it is about Magneto like trying to lead the X-Men. They obviously don't trust him because he's been a villain up to this point. And his fling with Rogue, which I hinted towards Wife Power, something's going to happen because she really likes Gambit and Rogue. Something's going to happen you're not going to like in the next episode. So I can't wait to watch that. But then Rogue and Magneto being an item is something straight from the comics.
I didn't realize that was a thing. I had no idea.
Yeah, because he can sort of touch her by manipulating the magnetic fields or something. So, so then there's like other things they sprinkled in. There's like the neutralizer that they shoot Storm with.
Right.
That's something that Peter Gyrick uses in the comics to actually on Rogue. So there's a spin on that here. And then the Executioner, the character that tries to assassinate Magneto during the trial, that's a character.
I was wondering, are we supposed to know who the guy is? We're supposed to know that.
Yeah, no, I think he's the Executioner. I think he's just a part of the Friends of Humanity, which is like the
Friends of Humanity. What a
the group that hates the mutants. So that's a character from the comics. He doesn't appear in the Trial Magneto issue, but they're sort of adapting multiple comic issues or arcs.
Kind of weaving things in together.
Yeah, weaving them in. And it's just done really well. And if you're a fan of the comics, you can kind of pick out these things.
I'm glad you mentioned those because I have a comic that I was thinking they were alluding to with the whole Storm arc. So in the episode that you're talking about, Storm gets hit. I actually thought they were like killing her off for a split second. And then there's a whole thing where she loses her powers because, like you said, the Executioner's beam has the same effect as the choke collar, but it's permanent and it takes away your abilities. It's kind of like
that
injection.
As far as we know, it's permanent. As far as we know.
Yeah. So it's like kind of like that injection that they were lining up to get in X-Men The Last Stand, you know, get rid of their powers and become human again. But I have a comic, X-Men 186, special double size issue, and it's called Life, Death, A Love Story. And, you know, Power, when we were talking about the trailer and we were speculating, Forge showed up in that trailer, right?
Yep.
And in this storyline, like a little bit of speculation ahead, possible spoilers, is like, Storm goes off because she lost her powers and then like kind of meets up with Forge. It was actually like I think one of Forge's weapons that took away
her powers, do you remember
how
I said
he wanted to try and like help her and then they end up like falling in love or whatever.
So do you remember how I said the episode titles are out there and they've released all the episode titles?
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
Not this week, but next week, the episode title is Life Death Part 1.
Oh, nice. So yeah, so it looks like they're heading that way.
So after, so 3 and 4 are going to be kind of, okay, gotcha. That's cool. I thought that was, I was also very well done too, because previously in the episode, she talks to Jean about how, you know, Jean and, you know, Cyclops are thinking about leaving the X-Men, and how she's like, I can't remember exactly how the conversation goes, but she basically says like, you know, I embraced having my powers. You don't want your kid to be human, or you do want your kid to be human. Like that discussion about how, if your kid's a mutant, it actually enhanced her life. That's what Storm was telling her, and how it was like, that's what she lives for in a way. Right. And then 10 minutes her later. Yeah. And then 10 minutes later, she loses her powers, and it's sort of, you know,
yeah, it's very poetic.
Leaves that note to Jean, and everyone's, you know, she's reading it to everybody. So I thought that was really well done too. Good. Yeah, very self-contained, but also like obviously something they're gonna carry forward and stuff. So I thought that was really well done. I think that the voice acting for Jean especially was probably my favorite of. I don't have the names in front of me, but for some reason her voice acting in the two episodes to me stood out over anybody else's. Maybe it's just the character. Maybe it's, you know, the sort of emotional moments that she's put in. But I thought that was the standout for me. But I wanted to mention, when you were talking about the Magneto trial and everything, I think I sent you guys a message saying, oh, episode 2 is like a wow thing for me. They went there kind of thing. I don't know if you guys know what I was referring to, but I immediately thought, with the protesters and all this stuff, this is a January 6th analogy. Mm. Storming the Capitol type of analogy. I know this is the UN. True. It's not specific to the US or anything, but it is about people being the other. It is about government in a way. It is about someone being put on trial in some way that may or may not be good or bad. And a sect of people, which was what, freedom of humans or whatever, what's it called?
Friends of humanity.
Friends of Humanity are very much the Proud Boys kind of bullshit. You know, I immediately thought of that. And I know it's not exactly same, but I was like, and maybe it's not that, but that's what I thought of. And I was like, and you know what? That goes to the point of what Mike said, you know, a few minutes ago, like when we first started talking about this, and how it's very in your face. And I think in a good way, that they are going for it when it comes to explaining the other and what the X-Men are really good, like why the X-Men are a good story and why they've always resonated with people, as they are the outcasts or have been outcasts. Magneto says it in the episode. He says like, what do they have to do to prove themselves, sort of speak. Like, I can't remember exactly what he says, but that's part of his speech when he's on trial. All of that stuff to me feels very current. Unfortunately, feels very current, and I think that is great, and hopefully the right message gets out there if people are watching this and seeing it. And I think that, like, I don't know, again, I don't know if that's what they're going for, but that's what I saw when the protesters bust through the door during that moment. That's what I saw. And it was like, holy
I think
shit.
You're on the money. Like, you're absolutely right about, you know, what you're saying there. It's true to the origin of the X-Men. They've always been this allegory, Mike, you've mentioned in the past, like, they've always been this, like, people love to just see the trailer and you'll see people going off online, you know, judging it ahead of time. Oh, it's gone woke, or, oh, you know, it's getting political. X-Men has always been political.
Are you kidding?
It's always been exactly like, Mike, you already said, like, that first episode, it was a lot like the pilot. Like, it's always been like that.
30,
it's always
so, 30 years
it's
ago.
Always been basically loosely based on the civil rights movement, and it's always been
immigration and like all these,
it's always
all
the, been
being the other,
like Professor X is like the Martin Luther King and Magneto is the Malcolm X equivalent. That's like the inspiration of X-Men by Stan Lee back in the day.
Yeah,
and that was all happening and he was writing X-Men. That was
exactly so it's nothing new in that sense, but it is like you said, Dave, like they're taking advantage of those connections, making connections to more recent events.
Unfortunately, those connections are still
Unfortunately,
true.
Unfortunately, those themes are still alive and relevant today.
Exactly.
As they were back in the 60s when Stan Lee wrote the comic.
Yeah, how much bullshit Martin is that? But also, but also, hey, we have more X-Men. So at the same time, that's it.
Yes, and we have this show to deliver these messages to, to the children, which is good, which is why we champion the show like this. And so...
Carl, let's talk about that big twist though at the end of episode 2.
Yeah, let's talk about that because
I want to get your thoughts because I don't really like understand the connection to the source. I don't understand what we're looking at with two genes, whether one of them is a clone or
really okay. Because I thought I would be the only one that has no idea what that is. I like it because I don't know. I thought
like I recognize Nathan Summers as like the I know what they're going with that, but I don't really understand the whole two gene narrative.
Yeah, so okay, you don't understand the two genes. All right.
Yeah,
so,
me neither.
So you don't know who Madeline Pryor is, do you, Ian?
Oh yes, yeah.
Yeah, so Madeline Pryor. So yeah, first of all, they have the baby in the episode, right? So let's just cap it off. So like Magneto goes on trial, he does the right thing, he's inspired by Xavier, and he's gonna take the more he typically is the Malcolm X, but he's going to take the more peaceful Martin Luther King approach now that Xavier has died and left him everything. He's changed, he turned over a new leaf, he's going to lead the X-Men, he's going to do it the way Xavier wanted. So that's where the episode ends, and then Jean has her baby. They name him Nathan Summers.
Nathan Summers is the name of Cable, who we've seen in Deadpool 2, yeah.
And then at the very end, another Jean Grey shows up. So there is a character in the comics called Madeline Pryor
who
appears right after Jean dies in the Phoenix saga, and it's a clone of Jean Grey. So there, and then the real Jean comes back, and there's always like two Jean Grey. Like, so it's like Ben Reilly, Peter Parker, Madeline
Pryor. My question to you is, in the comics, is Pryor. Nathan Summers a product of Cyclops and Madeline Pryor, or a product of Cyclops and Jean Grey?
That's a good question, and I don't know.
Well, I think
I don't know that answer.
I think that's part of what we're gonna try and have to find out, right? I think that's if that's what it is, which it sounds like it is, Mike, based on what you're saying. I think that's probably what we're gonna try and like. Who is the real Gene?
I do know the answer.
Oh, you do?
Because that's why. So one of those two characters is Madeline Pryor, but we don't know which one. I can spoil it for you if you want.
Well, I'll just say that my take is, based on what you said, my take would be that, no, it hasn't been Jean Grey all this time. It's been Madeline Pryor, and therefore the baby would be hers. But
that would be my guess. That's my guess.
In the comics, they could do it a different way, but in the comics, Cable is actually the son of Madeline Pryor.
Right.
And Jean Grey. But Madeline Pryor is a clone of Jean Grey. So he's still
Technicality.
And how does this clone happen? Or is that something we don't find out? Like what
is it a Mr. Sinister thing?
I think it's a Mr. Sinister thing, yeah. Okay. Yeah. And she pops up
because they already teased Mr. Sinister as a villain in the show in the episode itself.
Did they?
Yeah, she sort of like pops up and she looks like Jean Grey. And it's right after Jean like dies after the Phoenix saga, and then it's like later revealed. Yeah, it is later revealed that
so let's say it's either Jean Grey or
Madeline Pryor. She has no memories, but
whoever it is, the one who's pregnant has a vision, right? Where Master Mold is like kind of reaches highest form, and seems like they're all the mutants are dying. And then there's a flash of Mr. Sinister who's like supposedly behind it all.
Oh, is that who that was? Okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Okay. Mr. Sinister is also teased in the intro because he controls.
And we saw the voice of Mr. Sinister on the panel.
Yeah. As soon as in it. So Madeline Pryor, like full on spoilers, like Madeline Pryor, like takes a villain turn, like in the end, like in the comics now, she's like a straight up villain. She's like she's like the Goblin Queen, and she's like in the Spider-Man comics that we are reading now, Ian, like reading like leading Limbo and all this. Anyways, they might not go to these places, but
true. But it'd be pretty funny because we know that like Jean Grey also has the sordid past with like Dark Phoenix and whatnot. Now we have Madeline Pryor who's gonna break bad at some point.
Everyone in comics can go bad, go good, and die and come back, right? It's really anyone.
But also shout out Christopher Britton. That's the guy who voices Mr. Sinister in the animated series.
So most people probably aren't as familiar with the comics, and you know when she shows up, I like how every episode is ended with a cliffhanger, right? It's like, oh, Magneto, join the X-Men, what's that gonna mean? And it's like, oh, this other Jean Grey shows up, what's that all about? If you're a comic fan, you're like, okay, one of them is Madeline Pryor, but if you're not, you're like, what is this about? I wonder what you guys think.
I was like, oh cool, yeah. All right, it's just one of them's real, one of them's not, or you know, it's obviously not Morph because he's like standing right there, so I was just like, okay, well
My first thought is like, okay, well, if that's Jean or like maybe some alternate future Jean or something looking for the X-Men, then like what has Scott gotten himself into, like having a baby with this other Jean? Like it just seemed like a dramatic complication. But then I quickly thought about our teaser in our trailer talk, Power, and I noticed you already kind of mentioned the possibility of a clone of Jean. So yeah, so I'm right there with you. Right on the money with that. And I think they're expecting comic book fans to kind of bite on that, right?
Yeah, so every comic fan will know that one of them is Madeline Pryor. But the show takes some liberties, right? So you don't know which way it's going. And I don't know what I was gonna say. So go on.
I thought like it's like, you know, I don't know. It's off to a great start.
Yes,
it is. I know that like critics and stuff have seen like the first three, but I don't think we're that far behind just like doing one. It'd be great to check in on this series as it goes forward and maybe even touch on some of the major arcs from the original animated series.
I think that's what, look back. The plan is there's a good amount of episodes here that every arc or every couple of arcs, We'll check in with the series, because I think it's going to be, as far as I know, it's going to be episode like week by week. So we're going to have some time to sort of grab those episodes, absorb them, watch a couple at a time kind of thing, and then talk about them. So I think that's kind of what we did today, is kind of what we're going to do going forward with this. I think it's a perfect way of doing it.
Only like 10 or 12 episodes in the whole season.
So we'll have a few opportunities to do it. And then at the end, we'll sort of go through the whole arc of the show and talk about our feelings like we've done today. So
Dave, Power and I, when we were doing trailer talk, we went through all like the major character names, and then we discussed like speculation of who we might want to see in the series. Is there anyone from like the original animated series or just X-Men in general that you want to see pop up in this season?
You know what? It's tough for me because a lot of my knowledge of them comes from the show. Right. So do I remember everyone that shows up in the original series? No, I don't. But I've always been a huge Beast
villains
fan.
Maybe
villains.
Oh, Beast.
Yeah. Like I really like, I mean, I know Beast is always going to be there, so it's like kind of like a cop out answer, but I like the way he looks. I like that he's always sort of snarky, but also very smart and can always sort of back up, you know, everything with knowledge. He's like the giant blue Bill Nye that can kick people's ass. Like, I'm all for it. Right. He's probably still my favorite.
He's the Donatello of the X-Men, so
and that's why it works for me. Yeah, exactly. They have the brains that I don't.
Do we think that they're going to take the long route and ultimately bring back Professor X at some point at the end?
I do. I think they'll bring him back through Onslaught.
That's, I think so too. Oh, okay. I think that'd be amazing.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool. Yeah,
I want them to. So basically, a lot of those issues that I mentioned, if I can get into some speculation now, are still, you know, the main series was mostly based on Chris Claremont's X-Men run, which is probably the most famous X-Men writer and X-Men runs, and you know, Dark Phoenix, Days of Future Past, and Jim Lee. I would love for them to sort of do as many seasons as it takes to finish out all the classic Claremont runs, right? Like the Trial of Magneto was Claremont. Like these, there's still a lot more to do. But I would then love them to get into some of my favorite X-Men stories, which is the Joss Whedon Astonishing X-Men, when he introduces second mutations that everyone goes through. So everyone kind of gets like a second power, like Beast becomes like more beastly, as an example.
He looks more like an ape.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And I would love for them to get into the Grant Morrison new X-Men, where he just like a whole bunch of new characters and has like the Magneto was right storyline. Like I would love for them to start
Magneto was right.
I would love for them to continue. There's so many good X-Men. It's been a comic that's been going on for so long.
It's one of the oldest ones, right? Like one of the longest ones.
So yeah, keep this series going.
The beauty of it being X-Men 97 is we could start to get into the 2000s and they could really start to play with.
And that's when you could do the Joss Whedon and stuff, right?
For sure.
They might hop ahead to 99. They might hop ahead to 2000 for the next one if they make more, right? Like that's the beauty of it. I have a feeling that it's going to do well enough that they're going to make more, whether it's in the 90s.
I think it already greenlit another season.
Did they? Okay. Nice.
Be wrong, but I think so.
Even if they didn't, I wouldn't be surprised, and it's probably like
Oh, that's what it was. The guy who's kind of now gone has already finished season two writing wise and was already working on season three.
Oh, okay. So it's there.
Season two's in the can.
Yeah. Okay, it's just a matter of like what year it takes place in or whatever, depending on how they leave things off or whatever. Yeah, I think there's lots of opportunity here, and I think it's good. Like I think it's hard to argue that this is a great nostalgia pull, but it's still its own thing. And that's what makes it great. Like we've been talking about.
That's what we like on Back of My Day. Like when they do it well, right? When they capture nostalgia and they can push forward into break new ground.
So far, so good. So far, so good. So we'll check back in with the show as it progresses. We don't know exactly how many episodes we'll talk about in each particular one that we check back in, but it will be throughout the course of the series. So look out for that. But until that time, Mike, where's everyone finding a few good episodes that are coming within the jumble of each other here? We have Dune Talk. You guys have seen the latest Dune movie. We have a review of a movie that we probably should have reviewed a long time ago. That is a win from my back in my day summer movie wager.
2023 summer.
2023. Yeah, we should have. Then I think I pretty much at the time said like, yeah, we're gonna watch the summer movie wager reviews within this year, and here we are in almost the middle of 2024. Yeah. So yeah.
We basically reviewed X-Men 86.
just a tease if you haven't heard it yet. Yeah, exactly. Mike, where can everyone find all that stuff?
Yeah, so find us on social media if you want to follow along with the show. And follow our now X-Men 97 Stan account, which is what our Twitter account has turned into after me and Ian went to Comic-Con and this show has come out. And that's at Day Back In. But we'll be posting all the podcast news and new episodes and everything there. So follow at Day Back In. And we're on almost all the social media platforms, your X's, your Instagrams, Twitters, and Blue Sky, etc. And then the Patreon is patreon.com/backinmyday, where we talk about and review and go in depth mostly on the Disney Plus Star Wars and Marvel shows. And there was a new trailer for The Acolyte, so maybe we'll be talking about that there. So check out our Patreon. And thanks for listening. The podcast is called Back in My Day. Find it on basically any podcast app that you choose and leave us a review or a star rating or tell a friend. It all helps.
Indeed. Sirs, this has been a joy. Thanks for talking about your ventures at Comic-Con, and good to check in on X-Men. We will do that again soon. Until next time, everybody, thank you very much for listening. We'll talk to you soon.
Magneto. The last will and testament of Charles Xavier. Everything he built now belongs to me.